Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We turn now to what's up in the world of sports. Two great events last week in London. The marathon men's Wimbledon singles final between Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic. It was a five-hour thriller that saw Djokovic stave off two match points to win his fifth Wimbledon title. And as that match was being played, across town in London, what many are calling the greatest cricket match ever was also being played. Now, I quote directly here from the New York Times to give you a sense of the excitement. Stokes hit the ball and ran the length of the wicket and good for one run. Though he hadn't hit it all that far, he tried to hustle back for one more run. The ball was thrown in from the field. It looked as if it would be a close play, but the ball hit Stokes's bat. As he dived to the line, it caromed down the field all the way to the boundary, giving England four more runs for a total of six on the play. An amazing stroke of good fortune and a terrible, terrible break for New Zealand. You can imagine the excitement in the match, in the stadium itself, and also from this friend of mine who was watching this on television in his living room in Annapolis. I mean, just reading it in the New York Times, you just can't stand the excitement. But anyway, for tennis legend Serena Williams, it was a story of almost at the All England Club. Simona Halep needed a near-perfect performance to beat a fit and focused Williams on Saturday, and she did. The 27-year-old Romanian denied Williams of what would have been a record-equaling 24th Grand Slam title. This was Simona Halep's first Wimbledon title. And as the slog through the rebuilding process continues, the Orioles are 29-66 following last night's blowout win against the Washington Nationals. Attendance at Camden Yards continues to dwindle. Fans hope that some trades can help the team turn around sooner rather than later. The trading window closes on July 31st. In California, bold steps to implement compensation for collegiate athletes as the Fair Pay to Play Act in the California legislature inches closer to passage. In College Park, 1 year after the death of Maryland offensive lineman Jordan McNair, has anything about the athletic program changed substantially? Milton Kent, the host of Sports at Large here on WIPR and a member of the journalism faculty at Morgan State University, joins me here in Studio A, and Jeff Barker joins us as well. He's on the line from Washington. He covers national politics and the business of sports for the Baltimore Sun. Jeff, welcome to you.
Thank you, Don.
And Milton, welcome back, sir. It's good to see you.
It's, as a friend of mine from my church says, it's good to be seen.
Yeah, you have had some health challenges these past several months, and you're back in action, but you're feeling okay?
I have my moments here and there, but it's overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to be back here.
Yeah, some serious challenges and some serious therapy and the prognosis wasn't looking good for a long while.
No. There's still some things I suspect when you have cancer, I think you're always in a certain sense looking over your shoulder for what may come up, but my doctors are reasonably positive, so I'm reasonably positive,
yeah.
And I hope to be around here for a while to come.
Indeed, and we hope to have you around for a while as well. When it comes to prognoses for the Baltimore Orioles, you just had a Sports at Large commentary about that the other day. What are we to make of this? I mean, rebuilding years, no one expected, a championship competitive team, but boy, oh boy, it's pretty grim.
Yes, it is. And, the forecast, to quote an old blues song, I think the forecast calls for pain for a while. and Baltimoreans, Orioles fans, are going to have to get used to it because this club is not going to be good for the foreseeable future. I think any reasonable person would probably say it'll be 2021 or 22 before the trades that were made last year and the prospects that were purchased and whatever they put together, whatever they cobbled together on top of that, because you really can't win a division or a pennant or a championship with just your own talent. They're going to have to. And, that's another thing. I mean, that's sort of another sort of a piece of this puzzle is how willing will the club be, the management be, and how able will they be to go out and get that prized free agent or even just someone who can sort of fill in the slot to take them from good to contender. Over the last during the Peter Angelos stewardship of the club, they really haven't shown much of a willingness to do that, or at least to do it intelligently. So that's going to be the challenge going forward. How willing will they be to go out and get the talent they need to sort of fill in the holes?
And Jeff Barker, you cover the business of sports. This is this losing streak is costing them a lot of money at the box office. Attendance at Camden Yards down some average 3,000 people a game. That's a lot of tickets. That's a lot of hot dogs. That's a lot of beer. How are they doing financially? Obviously, ticket revenue is just one part of a large revenue stream. But how are they doing financially this year, and what are the prospects moving forward of their capacity to be able to buy the kind of talent we're going to need?
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna seg right into another topic, because when you ask about finances, attendance, of course, not good at all, and not really a hope for anything turning around on that front in the foreseeable future. Maybe after that, you know, in Major League Baseball, local television revenue means a lot more than it does, say, in the NFL. And the NFL, the national deals mean a lot more. And so you can guess where I'm headed here with the Mattson case with the Orioles is big when you look at their finances and the ability to go out and get free agents. They've got well over $100 million, $120 million that's up in the air during this continuing dispute between the Orioles and Washington Nationals. It's in the courts. I've been covering it. It seems like my whole life. It's been really
This is a long drawn out
6 years, but that's a big one because as I said, local television revenue means so much to major league clubs, and this is money that is just in limbo for them. And so if you're an O's fan, you hope that comes out in their favor.
Jeff Barker of the Baltimore Sun on the line from Washington. Milton Kent is the host of Sports at Large. He's here with me in Studio A. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you want to jump in, talk about the Orioles, talk about the Ravens, talk about some other sports topics on your mind, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @midday_WYPR. So, Milton, when it comes to the Orioles, what's your confidence level in the talent in the upper management that is overseeing this? We've got Brandon Hyde, our new coach from the Chicago Cubs. We've got Mike Elias, who was part of the team that put together the Houston Astros team that did bounce back and, win the World Series.
I guess you sort of give, in my other job as an instructor is to give grades. I think that the grade is going to be incomplete, probably on both Brandon Hyde and on Mike Elias, because what's success? What this all comes down to is, if they win one more game than last year, does that make this a successful year?
And they lost a record number of games last year, we should remind folks.
Exactly. the challenge is going to be, as the talent progresses, you hope it progresses, is the talent getting better? And I suspect that Elias is Elias is going to be on the hot seat a lot quicker than Hyde will be, even though Hyde may not keep his job as long, as odd as that will sound, because it's going to be Elias's job to bring in the talent, to sort of see what he's got. Now, he does get a little bit of a pass, because all the talent that's here now was here before he got here. So he has the freedom, in a certain sense, to make certain moves. He can cast off, say, an Andrew Cashner, as they did, trade him away, because that's not his responsibility. That was someone else's mess. As with everything else with this club, the larger question, I think, is how much interference will they get from the upper levels of the warehouse, meaning the Angelos family? Now, what we've been told is that Peter is not doing well, and that he's basically he's basically turned over day-to-day management to his sons. Let's see. In the past, one of the criticisms was that they tried to run the club like a rotisserie, a rotisserie team. Let's see if how they manage this all going forward.
Let's go to the phones to John in Baltimore. John, welcome to Midday with Milton Kent and Jeff Barker.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Okay, good. What I want to say is that, you know, a lot of that area, first of all, is a very tough area to go to games with.
You're talking about being downtown in Camden Yards?
Yeah, I mean, the crime, a lot of people are reticent to go down there. You know, it's not a good, no matter what you want to say, it's a tough area to go to, number one. Number two, you know, kids under nine, they get in for free. So you see a whole lot of kids there and not real baseball fans. So I think that the franchise is going to continue to do poorly until, number one, they get a better team. And number two, they control the crime in the city. You know, it's just the way I feel.
John, may I ask, where do you live?
I'm in Baltimore, a little further, North Baltimore.
You're in the city?
Yeah, right on the outskirts, yeah. North Baltimore.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, John. And Jeff Barker, when it comes to attendance at Major League games, just as a Major League problem, folks keep getting hit with foul balls, and that's been a problem. The Orioles have jumped on that bandwagon fairly quickly. They do intend, or maybe they've done it already. I haven't been down to Camden Yards in a while. They are going to add extra netting to the field. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to be done either by the end of this season, or they promise at least by the beginning of the 2020 season. And it sort of surprised people, I think. I did a piece on it a week ago, but I think what surprised people is that the Orioles have not always been known for being the fastest to make these kinds of important decisions. And I think part of that is we referred to Peter Angelos' health, you know, which is unfortunate. But I think that because he is not in control, Major League Baseball has been asking the Orioles, well, who's controlling the club? Who do we turn to make decisions? And consequently, I think that there's some bureaucracy they have to go through about making these decisions. But they made this one in a hurry. Only a handful of clubs had said, we're going to extend the protective netting all the way to the foul poles, to each foul pole. So the O's jumped on board pretty quickly. And when I talked to players and fans at Camden Yards recently, they were very supportive. And I was really interested, even a couple of the players said, we love this because when we hit foul balls in the stands, I know Stevie Wilkerson told me, I can't even look. He said, I turn my head because I'm so afraid, you know, that a ball that I've hit has struck a fan, which, of course, is not his fault, but it was just interesting to me that players have that perspective.
Sure. Milton, let's switch topics to the Ravens. Okay. Training camp begins this week, and there's this phenomenon about Madden NFL 20. Is that like it's a video game or something?
Yeah,
right?
Madden's huge.
It's huge, and the players in the NFL are ranked as a function of this game.
Uh-huh.
And these guys pay very close attention to their rankings, do they not?
Yes, they do. As a matter of fact, I was listening to a sports talk show earlier in the week, and one of the guests was Cam Jordan of the New Orleans Saints, and his rating was 91, which out of 100, trust me, any of my students would take a 91 out of 100 from me any
in
day
a heartbeat,
of the week,
yeah.
And twice on Sunday. He was offended. 91 was low for him. And it's kind of a sign of the times that you have this generation, you know, these millennials, basically millennial football players who grew up playing Madden, who are now a part of the game and say, well, geez, you know, I'm better than that, you know, and who do I go to where do I go to express my dissatisfaction in so many words? But yeah, it's very funny.
Yes, as a politician once said, where do I go to get my reputation
exactly.
back? Yeah. So Jeff Barker, this is like a huge deal, this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is part of NFL marketing as well as, you know, the video game marketing. It is very much interpolated into the whole NFL brand, is it not?
Oh yeah, and it just cracks me up. When Milton was talking, it reminded me of when I covered baseball more on a daily basis. I would occasionally see a player who would be at bat, and he would reach first base, but it was a play that could have been judged either a hit or an error, right? And so he would look up, the player would look up at the scoreboard and see that it was scored an error, and he would look up to where the official scorekeeper sat, and he would point his finger and disagree and say, no, that should have been hit. And you're thinking, well, why does that matter? And the reason it matters is because players care intensely about their personal statistics. And you think, well, why would they, you know, wouldn't they just want their team to win? But no, Madden is completely culturally relevant. And as Milton said, these players grew up playing that game. And sometimes, you know, you could argue that sometimes they might care more about their Madden score than they would about how their team does in a particular day. I hope that's not the case, but it could be.
It's interesting. Sort of dovetailing that. Football, unlike baseball and basketball to a lesser extent, football's not a game of numbers. You know, we probably, if we sat here right now, we couldn't tell, you know, none of us would probably tell who the leading rusher was last year. This, you know, this Madden thing in a way is a sort of a way of ranking, you know, of proving their worth. Players with, I guess, 99s, and there aren't that many, but players with 99s have a greater value, and certainly within their own communities, within the football community and within the millennial community. So that's why this whole thing is, you know, is so much more significant than we might think.
Yeah, and their agents, I'm sure, pay attention to it when time comes around. Yep. You know, it's just another thing to throw on the table. Mm-hmm. Jeff Parker, what's going on at College Park? University of Maryland, they had this incredible tragedy last season when Jordan McNair, the young sophomore lineman, died of heat stroke or heat-related injuries suffered in practice. Wallace Lowe, for a little while, the president of the university, looked like he was on his way out. He's now evidently going to be around at least until a year from now. There's an article in the Diamondback, the student newspaper at the University of Maryland, saying that things really haven't changed very much and they needed to. What's your take?
Yeah, I think that they've changed to an extent. I think that, and I want to be fair to Maryland because I've written stories certainly citing a lot of financial numbers about how they've struggled, how their move to the Big Ten conference hasn't gone at all as they hoped it would. So I want to be fair and say that I think the football program made a hire that could give them some hope. And I mean, Mike Loxley, who they hired, right? So DJ Durkin, of course, was the coach when McNair died. And so they've moved on. They've hired Loxley, who is from the DMV. He's popular among high schools. He has a reputation as a recruiter, which is probably why he got his job. And the reason that's so important right now is because people tell me that when you have a tragedy like this on a campus, you've got to convince the moms of the recruits that this is a safe place to send their son. And I think having a guy who had a relationship with this area, I think will maybe help mm-hmm. assure some of these moms and you know that this is still a place they can send their kid and not worry every day about them.
And Milton Kent, DJ Durkin, who was fired after all of this, was the highest paid state employee in the state of Maryland last year at $4.7 million. When it comes to Loxley, as he comes in as the head coach, will he be in an interesting position of perhaps having a little less pressure to win this year? Do people expect another rebuilding year for Maryland the way we're expecting it for the Orioles?
I think so. I mean, Jeff's point Loxley's a good choice in that sense because he can build up the talent base, so to speak. But to my mind, and I say this as a Maryland graduate, this, you know, I can't necessarily, obviously you can't place Jordan McNair's death on one person. But the sort of the building blocks for this go back to the move to the Big Ten in the first place. Maryland's got no business being in the Big Ten. They never have. The Big Ten is primarily a football league. The league that Maryland came from, is the ACC, is a basketball league. The entire Maryland thought process, if you will, is surrounded around basketball. And what the president, and this is a move made almost exclusively by Wallace Lowe, that move 5 or 6 years ago was to sort of bring in a football culture to a place that where it wasn't wanted and wasn't expected. So, you know, it compounds. Durkin being from coming from Michigan, the University of Michigan, again from Big Ten country, tried to bring in a football mentality where there is none.
Yeah. because you can't gin it up proud of nothing.
No, you can't. Yeah. You can't.
Well, we will conclude our conversation here about sports with an email from Paul in Annapolis. He says, as a lifelong Orioles fan, it hurts to see my guys do so badly, but no matter how they do, nothing beats a summer night at Camden Yards, the most beautiful ballpark in the world. Also, downtown is fine. Bring more kids to the game, not fewer. Come on, y'all. I'm with you, Paul. I appreciate it. And so that's a little pushback to our caller earlier in the conversation. Milton Kent is the host of Sports at Large on WIPR and a member of the faculty at Morgan State University, where he teaches in the School of Global Journalism and Communication. Great to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Tommy. And I really quickly just want to thank all the listeners here and folks here at the station, but also the listeners for all their support. I really appreciate it.
You are loved, and that is deserved. Jeff Barker covers sports and politics for the Baltimore Sun. And, Jeff, you're loved as well. Good to talk to you, man. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Tom. And Milton, best of luck with everything, man.
Thank you.
By the way, looking ahead on Midday, we are going to mark the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing on tomorrow with filmmaker Robert Stone and Dr. John Logsdon, the founder of the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University, and Baltimore-based pianist and jazz innovator Lafayette Gilchrist will stop by to talk about his new recording, Dark Matter. Coming up today, right after this quick break, theater critic J. Wynne Russick reviews this year's Contemporary American Theater Festival being held in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. I appreciate that. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.